The most valuable commodity on Earth today is data. How we make it, use it, move it, and protect it. My name's David McCall. Join me today for the QTS Experience. Three, two, one, Grant Shee on the QTS Experience. We're here at the beautiful ATP Cares event. You are the CIO of National DCP. Grant, thanks for coming on the show.
No, thank you, Dave, for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor.
My great pleasure. Well, normally when I sit down with somebody from the C-suite, depending upon their role, I like to dive into what technology you're talking about, what problem are you talking about, and you looked at me like I was crazy and said, man, let's not, all of the people are gonna talk about that. Let's talk about something a little bit different. And I threw the idea of culture out there. And as a great CIO, you helped me reframe it. And you said, well, I'd really kind of, and I don't want to put words on your mouth, I'll let you describe it in a second. But as you were describing it back to me, it reminded me of my days in the military where I said, you know, in the service, they teach us, it's all about command and control. And why I think the United States in particular has one of the greatest, if not the greatest, unbiased military on earth is because they teach us these things. You have the Geneva Convention, you have the Uniform Code of Military Justice. These are your guardrails on what it means to, what's a just war, how to be ethical or whatever. And then as a soldier, they teach you mission accomplishment and troop welfare. As a leader, as a member of a team, here's how you go about doing whatever. You know what your purpose is, mm-hmm. you know what to protect, you know how to operate. And you smiled and said, that's kind of what I was thinking. So why don't you expand a little bit about that as CIO for this organization, but just an executive in general, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think you hit those points really well, Dave. I think we in corporate America have a lot to learn from that military mindset, or we should. Mm. You know, I don't think all of us subscribe to it in the way that we probably should to be successful.
Too many push-ups. I didn't tell you about the push-up part.
I'm sure you rocked those really well though. So. Yeah. Maybe we should do more push-ups in corporate America. No, I think, you know, so many times people worry about what C title to have. And to me, just being an executive of an organization and carrying on and embodying the purpose, and you said it, right? The purpose, the intention, what is our mission? Mm-hmm. So for every organization out there, understanding and getting everyone aligned with that purpose and goal, I think should be job one. Mm. And then as you put it, you know, job two is, as you say, taking care of the troops. Mm-hmm. I think we have to put more focus on taking care of our employees mm-hmm. and the people who serve that mission. So mm. number one, making sure it's not just, you know, fancy words on the cafeteria bulletin board, but getting everyone aligned and bought into it. And I think sometimes if you're not bought into it, we need to do a better job of calling that out earlier
yeah.
and not letting someone go too long running their own mission or running right. a mission counter to the purpose and intent.
Yeah.
And I think as an executive, that's one of those things that you've got to have some of those adult conversations with people to say, hey, I don't think you're moving in the direction that we need to be moving in. Mm-hmm. We agreed to this and you're kind of doing your own thing mm-hmm. and we've got to snuff that out. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, we've got to take care of our people.
Right.
We've got to make sure, and that taking care of means empowering them. It means rewarding and recognizing them, but it also means having those tough conversations when things aren't going as planned or people are not moving with the intent that the organization sets out for.
This is an all about the military conversation. We didn't intend this, but it reminds me when I remember when I was a kid, hilariously, I left home to escape authority, so I joined airborne infantry. That was a great idea. I learned all about what they called wall-to-wall counseling. So, in one of our classes, we had a defector from one of the Eastern European countries, and they talked about what, this was in the 80s, and so, you know, when we answered the phone, we would say things like, today's army, don't feed the bear. You know, that was very much, it was a different kind of world back then, and who we imagined our adversary was and how we were protecting the ourselves. And one of the things that they talked about that was impossible for that country to replicate with the United competing with the United States was the way we trained. So in the US, we train with live fire ammunition. And that the reason for that is when we go to combat, we already know what bullets sound like. We already know what bombs sound like, or as close as we can simulate without hurting somebody. And most other countries in the world can't afford to do that. They either don't have the arsenal, they don't have the they don't have the ranges to do whatever it is, they don't have the ability to do it. And so that when the real thing happens, when you have to really exercise command and control, and it's, you know, as Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face, right? And that's the same thing. But the militaries that do it really well, where you train well, you take care of your soldiers, they understand what the mission is. There's, you can go deep into the organization on when do we break off? Mm-hmm. When do we, what are the rules? What are we trying to accomplish, et cetera? When the organization really knows that well. Now, I'm not saying that the private or the sergeant has the same information as the captain, the colonel, sure, or the general, but there are degrees of information, and it's shared, and we practice that communication a lot. And then when we're not in an actual event, we're using live fire, we're using other things. Now, how that translates exactly to the corporate world, I don't know, but I think that especially today, global pandemics show up. I mean, the world moves faster than it ever has. Communication opportunities and risk has never been greater. To the degree that you can do that as an organization is to the degree that, you know, can't just survive, you can thrive.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, you look at the world of sports, and I know you alluded to it, but championship teams will practice harder than the games actually are.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the keys. And if you boil that into a corporate setting, it's one of those where the little things that you do within your team, mm-hmm, those are the times that you need to be more or less critical with each other. Mm-hmm. The smaller the team, the more you can hopefully have honest conversations and try to improve each other in terms of performance, in terms of expectation setting, so that when in the corporate setting you are presenting in front of your board of directors or at a, you know, a big all hands meeting, mm-hmm, that message comes across so much cleaner. Mm-hmm. It's been polished, right? It's been practiced and rehearsed with live fire. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, one of the things that we should all strive to do more of is work on those little micro transactions and micro meetings or, mm-hmm, interactions to the point where it becomes second nature. Mm. I don't know if we all do that. And, mm-hmm, I think those are that's one of the shortcomings, frankly, of a lot of organizations and a lot of C-suite people, mm, is that you're often operating at a level that's too high. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about having that live ammo practice, we're really not doing that, at, mm, least not to the degree that we're actually training and enabling people to do it for real. Mm. Right? So I think there's a lot of crossover there and a lot of coordination that has to happen, but we're not the greatest at it.
Yeah. Do you think that's mostly, I mean, would you say that's deep or going down through a particular organization within a business? For example, it's going down through HR, it's going down through operations, or is it the peer level?
Well, and I think this is why it goes back to thinking as an executive first, and then as a CIO, a CTO, or a CISO second, right? Mm-hmm. So I take my responsibility of, you know, I have an organization that I want to play a role in being successful, and I understand the mission goals of the org. And by the way, I happen to look after the technology, mm-hmm, of that organization, but it's not the other way around, right? I don't want to put a technical or an IT agenda ahead of our mission statement. Mm-hmm. And I think you touched on, you know, one of the key things that we often gloss over is that very concept of communication. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we do it, the better we get at it. But I think that it gets often overlooked for the sake of technical expertise and experience. Yeah. You know, I think that'll always be there, but if people aren't practicing how they communicate, how they articulate a point, how they gain alignment, how they win people over, win ideas over, then I think all the technology in the world doesn't serve you, because if it doesn't get adopted, if it doesn't get used responsibly or right, you're actually creating more issues and diverting from the mission at hand. Mm-hmm. So I think that's key.
You know, in the military, technology comes and goes. Tactics are adjusted, strategy is adjusted. One of the things that doesn't change is there's a chain of command. Mm-hmm. And so you have a commander in chief, you have then a cadre of professional soldiers that serve the commander in chief. The deeper you go into the ranks, the more change there is, but there is a command and control. And so there is, when you were describing that, this is where it breaks down a little bit, the civilian world versus military world. I can imagine coming into my captain saying, sir, I think we feel like we need to get everybody on board. And that didn't go over as well as you might think. But in all seriousness, the best executives, I'm imagining, I was never in the Ranger Battalion, but I have a number of friends over there in these special ops units, Force Recon in the Marines, Ranger Bat, Special Forces, et cetera. And what they were really good at is soliciting ideas from their, you know, they're trying to develop their executives, their junior officers, bringing their experiences and their perspective, and then a decision is made. And so long as you're operating between these parameters that we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, execute the mission. This is the mission, and this is what I want you to do, and this is how I want you to do it. And this is how command and control works. So once we decide, we're all in, and away we go. And if you're not in the military, they bring significant consequences to the organization. How would that translate, do you think, in the executive world? Or is there room there to say, look, we're in agreement, let's move forward? And the reason why I ask that is, when I see this work well, you know, it's remarkable what an organization can get done. When there's a lot of pretense, which is the executives in the room say, we're all on board, but when they go back to their organization, their individual organization, they're maybe not as on board as they appeared to be. How do you work through that?
Yeah, well, first off, I think what you're describing is whatever dissension, whatever challenges you have should be done in the unit, right?
Right.
Like within the unit first before you expand it out. And then once you leave that room, it should be decided, what is our stance and how are we going to communicate this?
Right.
And if there's anyone that has a problem with it, it should be solved in that room,
right?
The worst thing to do is to say, well, I'll agree with you,
right,
but then when I go to someone else, I'm going to have a separate discussion with them and tell them what I really think. You know, it's a shame, and I guess I've been fortunate enough to be in organizations where I feel like I work with people who are able to have that very adult, very evolved conversation to say, hey, here are the challenges I have with either our mission or how we're going to go about it. Let's work that through while we're together. Mm-hmm. And then when we leave to communicate this to the troops, the rest of the group, mm-hmm. outside sources, we have a united front, right? Mm-hmm. We have the same talking points. We're consistent. Mm-hmm. And if there's any problem with that, this is the time to get settled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I hate the most is, let's take that offline.
We're
in the line now.
Let's
talk about it here as a group. Once we start taking things offline, that's when problems start to happen.
Right.
So I hope that for people listening, that's one of those things that we work on, not saying as much and in practice not doing as much, right? That you should be, you're together, work it through there, and then when you go offline, we shouldn't even have one of those things. So,
right.
But I think in addition to that, what you're also referring to, Dave, is oftentimes people sign up for things without really understanding what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think when you're in the room, that's the time to ask those questions and say, hey, I know we're agreeing to this, but has anyone else thought of the ramifications of this? You know, there's this concept that I have around wake, and every decision that's made, it's like a boat going through water.
Mm.
It's fine to say this, the destination we're going, the speed, the heading, all that, and we're all on board. But has anyone ever turned around to look at the wake that boat causes going to its destination? And you've got the ripples in the water, you've got the pollution coming out the engine. Let's face it, some boats cause a bigger wake than others.
Right.
And so if an organization makes a decision or a team makes a decision and it creates a lot of wake, you might have to question, was it worth doing that? And look at all the stuff we cause behind us that other people in our wake that are trying to follow mm-hmm. have to now ingest.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that is, you know, figuring that out and cleaning that up
mm-hmm.
so that you create the least amount of wake that you can. Now, sometimes wake is good.
Right.
But I think for the most part, it's an unintended consequence that people don't really think about.
I agree. And it depends on, you know, I love how you're talking about wake. We just bought a boat. We're coming up on the anniversary of our first year owning a boat. We own a tri-tune out here on the lake.
Very nice.
And we've had to learn, they really frown upon you racing right up to the dock, slamming it into reverse and bringing all of that momentum with you. So if I'm out in the main channel of the lake, I should expect there's going to be wake. I'm creating it. I'm driving through it.
Yep.
On our particular boat, because it's a tri-tune, it's got one of those front doors where you can dive off the front.
Sure.
But when the big cruisers go by, we learned this the hard way, you hit that wake, it snaps that door in and broke the little hinge on our door, so we had to fix that. But there is a consequence to this momentum. It may be a consequence that you want, so people are tubing behind it and they're enjoying it while they're skiing or whatever, but you're impacting your environment. I'm curious, when you, how long have you been in the position that you're in now, not just for this organization, but just in this role, CIO type role?
It's been about three years now.
Okay. Do you get a lot of welcome response from your co-executives when you took, because this is what your sort of code for saying is, I'm looking at my peers, because you have a lot of influence over your organization. If you see people not buying into, I've articulated the mission, do you understand it? And if they act with pretense, you can adjust your organization, maybe not wall-to-wall counseling, which I got adjusted. My NCOs did not allow a lot of dissension, mostly because people would get killed. You know, if you're out on the live fire exercise and somebody, we would do this thing called the bounding overwatch. And so we'd move ahead and your other team has to shift fire, then the other team, and there's all these other tactics. We jumped out of airplanes, we rappelled, we did all these other things. And the consequences of not checking your gear, the consequences of not following, most of the time were small, maybe bruising, mm-hmm. but every now and then they were fatal if you didn't do things correctly. In an organization, as you know, looking down on it, you have a lot of influence over your managers and leaders, your direct reports and direct report to your direct reports. But the peer level is where I find that sometimes that the harder conversations have to be, are we aligned? And if we find that we're out of alignment, how do we adjust to make sure our organizations are working together?
Yeah.
How is it that you found you're most successful making sure that you stay aligned with your peers and they stay aligned with you?
Yeah, I think it comes down to understanding what collectively you're good at and what you're not good at. Mm-hmm. And I think putting just as much emphasis on what you're not good at and being very upfront with it and mm-hmm. saying, you know, hey, here's a concept of an initiative or something we're trying to do strategically as an organization. I know that we can do this really well, mm-hmm. but I also don't believe that these things are our strengths, but we need them to be if we're going to be successful. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes those are reflections of your team or whatever it is that you're responsible for. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go to your peers with that openness and that transparency that says, look, if you agree this is our goal, do you also agree that these are the things that prevent us from possibly being successful in achieving that goal? Mm-hmm. And some of those things are things that you own, some of those things are things that I own, but it doesn't really matter mm-hmm. who owns it. Can we objectively say those are going to be detriments to us or going to be challenges? Mm-hmm. And I think if you have that type of conversation where you focus on, here's what we're trying to get done, yes, mm-hmm. but here's also the things that are impeding us or possibly serve as risk to us, yes, then I think you can evolve to the next phase of what do we do about it, mm-hmm. right? What do we do collectively to fix it? And I think sometimes people get caught up in this thing of, well, my group's ready to go, mm-hmm. but you know, this guy over here is really what's preventing us. And the reality is it's often not that clear cut. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the danger of drawing some of these artificial boundaries in ownership mm-hmm. and in scope and responsibility get us in trouble. But I think the more you can break that down and say, hey, if we're here for the same mission, we're here for the same goal, it doesn't really matter where that responsibility lies. If we recognize this is a weakness for right. us, if we recognize this is a challenge for us, what can we do together to fix it?
Right.
So I think that's true collaboration, right? That's true alignment.
In the military, they call that operational maturity. And what that means is the Navy nails this, especially in their nuke programs, where you need to know your job, you need to be world-class at your job, but you also need to know your neighbor's job. In the infantry units, you know, you've got your role and responsibility, your area of fire, whatever that is, but you also need to know your neighbor to the left and to the right, so you can step into the gap to help them if they are, one, to recognize if they're in need of help, mm-hmm. and it's not your job to raise your hand and call them out, it's your job to help them, unless it's a systemic failure, and then absolutely sure. Do that. You can't jeopardize the mission or the rest of the troops. But it's to step in and help reinforce. It's also to cover them if they fall. It's also be able to rescue them in an area. And so that has a foundation, not to be a little odd, but I've come to believe this in the last decade to be true, comes from a foundation of love. How do you build trust? How do you build love? How do you build affection? If you're all about, while I'm accomplishing this mission, this taking care of these troops, I'm interested in my neighbor. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in human flourishing. If you do that and you build an organization that looks like that, nobody's gonna be able to stop you.
Well, that's why it comes back to, what is your true intention as an organization, any kind of work, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be business. It's the teams that win championships are not the ones who obsess over, I want to have the number one ranked defense right. in the NFL. Well, if that doesn't result in a Super Bowl or right. whatever your goal is, what good is it to be known as the number one defense? Right. Don't you want to be the number one team?
Right.
And so I think too often people are worried about, well, I want to get ranked this,
right.
or you know, I want to make this magazine cover. Okay, right. that's great,
yeah.
but is that really your goal? And if it is, congrats, you got it, but I'm willing to bet that's probably not your end mission. That's yeah. not the thing that you have all these men and women right. working as a collective towards. So
right.
Until you can get that purpose and until you get that alignment, then I think there's too many individual goals that start to get in the way, and they masquerade as your overall corporate mission, corporate goals, and so forth.
Well, Grant, we could talk all day.
I would love to continue the conversation.
I would have yes. to have you on the podcast. I look forward to
I'd
it.
To.
Enjoy your event, and thank you for joining us today. I
Wonderful.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
All right, thank you. Great. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you.